TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. 4 minutes to midnight. Dr. Helen Caldicott. 30 years after Helen Caldicott first appeared in the U.S. and became a charismatic speaker and tireless organizer in the anti-nuclear movement of the 1970s to early 90s, she has returned from Australia to once again help build an anti-nuclear movement in the U.S. She says that matters are worse now than they were during the earlier campaigns. The U.S. and Russia are still pointing nuclear missiles at each other that are on hair trigger alert. In June of 2002, the U.S. violated a major arms control agreement by withdrawing from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty and is now going forward with huge new nuclear weapons programs, including weapons for use in space. My friend Bonnie Faulkner, host of the KPFA radio show Guns and Butter, interviewed Helen Caldicott at the end of 2004. Their conversation took place before Seymour Hersh disclosed in The New Yorker that reconnaissance missions were flown over Iran and that a U.S. strike at Iran's nuclear facilities might be imminent. Helen Caldicott predicts a U.S. or Israeli strike against Iran. She also says that the real rogue states of our time are not Korea, Syria, or Iran, but the United States and Russia, who are holding the rest of the world hostage with their huge nuclear arsenals that they keep on hair trigger alert. Bonnie and Helen are happy to see their conversation rebroadcast on TUC Radio. Here's Bonnie Faulkner. The conversation has turned to uranium weapons.
Canada's Uranium Medical Research Center conducted tests on citizens from Afghanistan after the invasion of Afghanistan, and the results of their tests were suggesting that there was some form of uranium weapon that had been used, because these people were testing at 100 to 400 times greater than the Gulf War vets from the first Gulf War.
I know that uranium has been found in urine of some people from Afghanistan and certainly in Iraq. It's not a nuclear fissile weapon. In other words, if you blow up an atomic bomb, you're going to get materials such as strontium-90 and cesium-137 and radioactive iodine and plutonium and the like. If you only find uranium in their urine, it's these weapons, uranium weapons.
Now, you're referring to depleted uranium, aren't you?
Yes, well, it's uranium-235, and I don't like using the word depleted uranium because it sounds as if it's depleted of radiation. Let me just go back. When you dig uranium out of the ground, it has two isotopes, uranium-235, which is the fissionable material used in nuclear power plants and for nuclear weapons. That's present in only 0.7%. The rest is uranium-238. So most uranium is uranium-238 with a half-life of 4.5 billion years, which is the material used for these weapons. So you remove the uranium-235 from the 238, and you're left with 238. So it's only called depleted because the uranium-235 has been removed, but it's still extraordinarily radioactive. So it's a euphemistic term which tends to hide the fact that it's extraordinarily medically dangerous.
What about the rest of the use of radiation? For instance, they want to irradiate the food.
They're irradiating your food. They don't want to. They are doing it. It's a way to use waste from nuclear power plants like cobalt-60 or cesium-137 that emit huge, very high energy, huge amounts of gamma radiation, which are like X-rays. What they do is they kill the viruses, the bacteria, and the fungi in the food so that it doesn't, quote, spoil. It has, quote, a longer shelf life. I hate those terms. The trouble is that often the food is then handled in a cavalier fashion and becomes contaminated once again with bacteria and the like before it's packaged. But what happens to the food is that new molecules are formed by this very high level of radiation called radiolytic products, very few of which have been tested for mutagenicity or carcinogenicity. So we don't really know what this is doing to the food. The other thing is that most of the vitamins are also destroyed. And it's absolutely unnecessary, and it's dangerous because workers can be exposed to radiation. The whole thing is sheer madness, I would say.
You know, one of the great things about your book, The New Nuclear Danger, is that it looks like it could be used as a resource book, a handbook for people. You have bios of the people in power. Appendix B is U.S. Nuclear Weapons Control Centers, and you list them all. For instance, Cheyenne Mountain. Now, that is something that I have only recently learned about. Could you talk a little bit about Cheyenne Mountain and NORAD and what goes on there?
Well, there's a huge mountain near Colorado Springs called Cheyenne Mountain, and they've dug out a very, very large cave in it. It's got a door many, many, many feet thick of steel so that people could go in there and be sheltered and protected from the effects of a nuclear war. And it's part of NORAD, but Canada's part of that too, to monitor weapons coming from Russia, weapons going from America to Russia. In other words, to monitor the nuclear war, which could occur any day, actually, by accident. And it's a very scary facility. I always feel very frightened when I go to Colorado Springs. And then the other part of that is the Strategic Air Command, which is in Nebraska. And I went there and visited the top general there some years ago. And you go through a big arch gate and it says, "Peace is our profession." And if you go right down into the bowels of that particular facility, they've got huge, huge screens. And you've all seen them in films like War Games and the like, where they watch missiles and they watch various things going on around the planet to interpret whether or not America is under a nuclear attack from Russia, which it could be tonight because, in fact, Russia got to within 10 seconds of annihilating the United States in January 1995 by making a mistake. And indeed, I'm in touch with some people in the Russian military now who are so terrified that they're going to blow America up by accident because their early warning system only operates 8 hours a day now, and their nuclear facilities are severely dilapidated while their weapons are still on hair trigger alert. So we're under more danger now than we were actually at the height of the Cold War, much more danger. And this colonel, who was a missileer in the Russian military, Colonel Valery Yarenich, is pleading with me to organize a symposium in Washington with the top people in the command, control, communications, and intelligence sections in Russia and America to talk about how, in fact, either country could blow the other country up by accident and then, in fact, destroy the whole planet. I just need $100,000 to do that conference, which probably is the most important conference that anyone could hold at this moment on the planet.
I didn't know that it actually said "Peace is our profession" at Strategic Air Command in Nebraska. That is a line, that is a sign right out of the 1960s movie Dr. Strangelove.
It is. And I saw a man who was in control and charge of it called General Benny L. Davies. And I went into his office and it was really quite spooky. It was like Kafka. His office was covered with models of missiles. And, you know, I called my book in the 80s Missile Envy, and it really felt like that. And for half an hour, we argued, and he had such extraordinary animosity and anger towards the Soviet Union. And finally, towards the end of that half an hour, I turned to him and I said, "Have you got grandchildren?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "How old are they?" He said, 2 and 9 months. And suddenly his face sort of melted and softened in front of me. And he knew that what he was saying was really wicked, and he knew it was wrong and incredibly dangerous. And I think that it's important to get to people's souls when we talk about this.
What, in your opinion, should people do to deal with the nuclear arms race?
Well, as your great Jefferson said, President Jefferson, an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. You must inform yourselves. So I would suggest reading my book, The New Nuclear Danger, George Bush's Military-Industrial Complex, first, and read all the material at the end of that book the corporations who are involved in making nuclear weapons. Their CEOs are mentioned, their addresses, how you can get to them. As you said, all the nuclear facilities around America, all the anti-nuclear groups around the states and indeed in the world. Become well informed. Don't believe anything I say. Practice critical thinking, research, investigate, and find out what the truth is. As you learn and allow this information to seep into your soul, you will over time be impelled to do something. And what you do is really not for me to tell you. I believe that there's a blueprint for every human soul, but I will tell you that people come out with the most amazing actions, and it is now time for all of us, millions, to rise up and finish the work that was not completed in the 80s and actually abolish nuclear weapons between Russia and America in the next 5 years. And America has to and must take the lead on that. When the Bush administration talk about morality, it's not to do with abortion or gay marriage or stem cell research, but real morality is to save God's creation, which is in danger of extinction every minute of every day. And that's what the churches should be getting into. That's a real spiritual issue of our times. Never before, ever, has the human race in its 3 million years of existence had to face the fact that we can blow up the whole creation within an hour.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of these nuclear weapon control centers. You mention in your book something called Project ELF at Clam Lake, Wisconsin. You say that Project ELF stands for Extremely Low Frequency Communication System.
Yes, they've actually closed that down, I have to tell you. That was a way to communicate with the Trident submarines, and they don't need that anymore. They must be communicating some other way. But I will tell you that America has 18 Trident submarines, most of which are at sea at any one time. On each Trident submarine are 24 missiles. On each missile are 8 hydrogen bombs, 30 times larger than the Hiroshima bomb. And these things glide silently and soundlessly through the oceans, threatening always Russia. Their weapons are targeted on Russia. And it is also true that a commander, should he become psychopathic and induce his second in command, he, without communicating with the Pentagon, could launch his nuclear arsenal and start a nuclear war and destroy the whole of Russia. As I talk about these numbers, just remember that there are only 240 major cities in the Northern Hemisphere. America's got 5,000 nuclear weapons, including the Tridents, on hair trigger alert, and Russia has 2,500. Such is the redundancy of nuclear weapons at the moment that Russia has 40 hydrogen bombs targeted on New York alone. Yet all the press want to talk about is a terrorist bomb on New York. I'm talking about annihilation of the planet and the fact that every city and town with a population of 50,000 people in America is targeted with at least one hydrogen bomb. And Russia, and China, and Europe, and England, and Australia. That's what we should be talking about.
Speaking of Australia, what is the Joint Defence Space Research Facility at Pine Gap?
It's the largest CIA base in the world, which orchestrates the killing in Iraq and Afghanistan and the Middle East. It spies on a large percentage of the world's population. It monitors all communications that we have in Australia, domestic and international. It is rented for one peppercorn per year from the Australian government. And when it was first put in, it was told to the Prime Minister, Gough Whitlam, that it was actually a defence facility, but it's not. It's a huge, huge spy facility in the middle of our country run by Americans. And it will participate in the National Missile Defence Project and in the weaponisation of space. There are only two governments in the world that can blow up the planet and cause nuclear winter, Russia and America, who own 97% of the 30,000 hydrogen bombs in the world. Only Russia and America.
What is China's nuclear capability?
China's only got 18 to 20 missiles that can hit you. That's all.
What about Israel?
Israel hasn't got you targeted, but Israel's got 200 to 400 hydrogen bombs. Some say the third largest nuclear arsenal in the world. Britain's got about 130. France has got about 300. China in toto has about 250. Pakistan's got about 40 to 50. And India's got about 90.
Then is it only the United States and Russia that have the capability of blowing up the entire world?
That's the truth. They are holding the world at ransom. The only rogue states in the world, really, are Russia and America, holding the world at nuclear ransom every second of every day. And people can't get their heads around the fact that their best friends, why would they want to blow up the planet? They don't want to. It would happen by a computer error. It would happen by misinterpreting, for instance, a Norwegian weather satellite being launched as an attack on Russia by the United States from its Trident submarines. That's when Yeltsin got to within 10 seconds of pressing his button in 1995. It would happen if your early warning satellites that pick up infrared radiation misinterpreted a wildfire for an attack from Russia. That's unlikely, but it's more likely Russia would do that. When I wrote my book and gathered all the information and the data, I really honestly couldn't understand how we're still here. People need to understand what a single hydrogen bomb does to a city. Let me describe it. It could happen as we're talking. Know that every city and town is targeted with at least one hydrogen bomb. They will come in at 20 times the speed of sound, so you won't hear it, explode with the heat inside the center of the sun. Dig a hole 3/4 of a mile wide and 800 feet deep, turning all that rock and earth below and buildings and people to radioactive fallout shot up in the mushroom cloud. Out to a radius of 5 miles, every person will be vaporized, turned into gas, as was a little boy in Hiroshima who left his shadow behind him on the pavement, which is presently in the Hiroshima Museum. 20 miles in all direction, everyone will be totally burnt, lethally so. They will die without any medical attention because we, the physicians, are currently similarly targeted and we will be lethally burnt or hospitals destroyed. But the White House has been stockpiling huge quantities of morphine just in case it's to be a nuclear war. 50 miles out, if you look at the flash, you'll be instantly and permanently blinded. The whole area then will be engulfed in a firestorm of 3,000 square miles. And as every city and town is so targeted, the fires will coalesce. And the whole of the United States will burn, coast to coast, north to south. All the oil refineries, chemical facilities, and nuclear reactors will melt down and burn, and a huge cloud of black radioactive smoke will rise up into the stratosphere, covering the earth with clouds so thick from America, Canada, China, Russia, Europe, England, and Australia that the sun will be not able to penetrate probably for up to a year, inducing a nuclear winter and a short ice age. Photosynthesis will cease and temperatures will plummet disastrously and most creatures on the planet will die except maybe the cockroaches. That's what I'm talking about. And that could occur tonight because these two crazy countries, Russia and America, which are run in a military fashion by the generals who like their missiles, are still targeting each other and threatening each other with extinction, and it's not just those countries, it's the whole of the planet. Never before was there such an issue that the churches should take up for what is their responsibility to God to maintain the creation. And yet no one is talking about it. It's the most amazing situation that I've ever seen in my lifetime.
You mentioned that Russia's early warning system only operates 8 hours a day. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, their satellites are worn out. Now, the early warning system consists of a series of satellites, both in Russia and America, with infrared detectors on them. So if Russia launches its weapons, America's infrared detectors on the satellites pick up the flame from the missiles, and that's how they know if you're under attack, and vice versa. The Russian system is so degraded and dilapidated that their system only works 8 hours a day, which makes them extremely paranoid and anxious because America's still got an official military policy to strike first with a preemptive nuclear war, knock out the Russian satellites and, quotes, win a nuclear war, if you please. Apart from the fact that a short nuclear winter will ensue, that's still a policy of the Pentagon, and the Russians are really scared. that they won't see your missiles coming so they can launch their missiles in time so your missiles will hit empty silos. It's psychopathic, and yet no one's talking about it.
Could you say a little bit about the new preemptive strike policy of the United States government, the strike first?
Yeah, well, this is how you will win a nuclear war, right? You knock out the Russian satellites so they can't see your weapons coming. You decapitate Moscow and Putin so he can't press his button. Decapitate is a military term. You drop a hydrogen bomb or more on Moscow. Now, the Russians know that that's your policy, so they've dug out two big caves in the Ural Mountains in which there are a couple of military men. If they see that Putin and Moscow have been decapitated, they send up a single rocket called a Dead Hand, which sends out radio signals to all their missiles in their silos to launch before your missiles and hydrogen bombs hit their silos to kill their missiles. Now, you are aware that that could happen, so that's why you're putting up a national missile defense system. So if they happen to launch their missiles through the Dead Hand mechanism, then you'll knock out their missiles in space. Not that your national missile defense will ever work. And that's what I've described in the new nuclear danger. If you read that, you'll be walked through that particular situation. The whole thing is absolute insanity.
Now, the National Defense Space Shield, they call it a defensive shield, but it really is an offensive one, isn't it?
Offensive, yes. It's offensive. And they say it's about North Korea. It's got nothing to do with North Korea. Rumsfeld lied when he said that. It's about fighting a nuclear war against Russia. And the X-band radars they're putting up to detect whether or not the Russian missiles have been launched, the whole thing is targeted and focused upon Russia, not North Korea.
You mentioned that the United States doesn't have any military enemies. Do you think the United States government regards other countries essentially as their economic enemies? In other words, what do you think is motivating all of this?
Well, what money? You're spending $500 billion a year on weapons. If you spent $1 million a minute since Jesus was born, you would have just got $2 trillion. And all that money is going to the Pentagon and to the coffers of Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Raytheon et al. These are the new robber barons. I mean, I can't understand how the American people sit in it passively, allowing their money to be stolen from them for death and destruction. I had a friend who was an admiral who once said to me, "Helen, our mission in the Pentagon is to destroy property and to kill people." That's what the Pentagon's about, to destroy property and to kill people. And you have no health care system. 45 million people have no health care in the richest country on earth. You're the only Western nation without a decent medical system. Your children are being ill-educated on the whole. All education should be free, paid for by the federal government. And that's your birthright. I don't understand why there isn't a degree of indignation in the American population to say you are not going to steal our tax dollars anymore. They're to be used for us and for our benefit and our health and our children.
It is unbelievable that people have become convinced that somehow a national health care would be a disaster for them.
Oh, it's just ridiculous. I mean, let's face it, I just practice medicine in Australia in the Sydney Children's Hospital. We've got the best health care system in the world. Drugs are practically free. Well, they are in hospital. If you're in a public hospital, you pay nothing. You can be, you know, a transplant patient on 20 drugs. You pay nothing. It's all free. All free. And it's state-of-the-art. Medical care, state of the art, better than here, even better than at Harvard, I have to say, where I worked for many years in the cystic fibrosis clinic.
Dr. Caldicott, could you describe the Nuclear Policy Research Institute that you're the president of?
Yes, when I wrote The New Nuclear Danger, I analyzed why America's in such a sorry state at the moment in terms of the military and the nuclear weapons situation. And the reason is that the media is dominated by the right-wing think tanks, Heritage Foundation, that spends $29 million a year on the media, which is funded by Lockheed Martin and Scaife and Mellon and Coors Beer and Reader's Digest and Ocean Spray Cranberries and Holiday Inns and the like. And I thought, well, I'll set up my own think tank and I'll get equal time on the media because, like the medical profession who practices the ethics of medicine where we treat all people equally with total respect, so the ethics of journalism dictates that opposite points of view get equal time. Now, it's been hard for me, actually, to get equal time with the right-wing think tanks, but that's my goal because education is the key to informing a democracy who will respond in a responsible fashion. And so I've got my think tank, Nuclear Policy Research Institute, in K Street, surrounded by the other right-wing think tanks, and we're starting to make a mark. We are having very exciting symposia. We just had one in Chicago called Nuclear Power and Children's Health. Chicago is surrounded by 14 nuclear power plants, most of which are old and dilapidated and very dangerous. And if one of them melts down, that's Chicago's 9/11. We're going to have a conference soon called Full Spectrum Dominance about the weaponization of space. We want to take out a 30-page supplement in the Philadelphia Inquirer or one other paper, which will get to 16 million people with 30 articles about the weaponization of space. So we're doing very important pioneering work.
Dr. Helen Caldicott, thank you very much.
That's a pleasure.
That was part two of a two-part program with Helen Caldicott in conversation with radio producer Bonnie Faulkner of Guns and Butter. Helen Caldicott was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize for her anti-nuclear campaigns from the 1970s to the early 90s. She has returned to the U.S. from Australia in 2002 to help build a new anti-nuclear movement here. She recently founded the Nuclear Policy Research Institute. Their website is www.nuclearpolicy.org. That's nuclearpolicy.org. Helen Caldicott also wrote a new book, The New Nuclear Danger, George Bush's Military-Industrial Complex. You can find more information on Helen Caldicott on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look into the newest programs section. You can get information how to order a copy of the complete one-hour conversation with Helen Caldicott by calling us. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your tape or CD order is the only support we receive and helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE. For information on how to order, you can get your tape or CD by mail or credit card, by phone, or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 1-877-882-8273. My name is Mariah Gallardon. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.